The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, welcome along to the GAA Hour sponsored by AIB. Now, there's only one place to start, Conor. Unfortunately, it's with you because, you know, we were keeping our eyes peeled last Sunday to see how you were getting on in your intermediate final replay, or Saturday.
Saturday night.
Yeah, I wasn't peeling them too much if it was Sunday. If it was Sunday when I was looking for it. But this is heartbreak. Tell us about the heartbreak, or is it bottle job? We'll decide when you describe what happened.
Okay, I'll let you decide. I'm able to laugh now. God, the last few days have been full of tears, but... on Saturday night, I told you all about last week. So last week, we went from being 7 points up to conceding a goal and have to rescue at the last kick of the game. Saturday was a bit different. We were 5 points down at half-time. We were a man down at half-time. So if you're looking in from the sidelines, you would have thought we were goosed. With 14 men then, we actually kept them to a point for the entire second half and went 3 points up. I was off the pitch at this stage, bit of a slightly torn hamstring.
Important to get that bit in, right?
Get that in there quickly.
So you're 3 points up, how long is left?
Four minutes of injury time left.
After rallying from five down with 14 men
and keeping them to a point for the second half. And then...
Then what happened?
Then their midfielder comes forward and hits a shot to the top corner from 20 yards out while 13 men tried desperately to foul him and we lose the kick out and immediately they kicked the ball over the bar. We had about a minute left after that, but our goose was cooked, I'm afraid.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bottle job to me.
you talk about the toughest and that is just heartbreaking stuff.
Just doesn't get any worse. Yeah, I think that's all I can talk about now, William, Fred. Yeah.
What happened with the midfielder? Did no one drag him down?
It would not happen in Ulster football. It just would not.
5 points would not become a 3 point, like an 8 point swing. Like it would not be 3 points in the lead in Ulster. That would never happen. There were sort of deficit changes, but then the midfielder would never get through, especially in the last minute.
This is why we love Mayo football, yeah. Though,
it really wasn't from the lack of trying, and like everybody that was alongside me in the sideline, like cynical and all as it is, were just shouting foul.
Yeah.
But the last pass before the only chance we had to do was the last pass before the goal. But rather than hold on to it, fair play to him, he flicked it and prevented the incoming full back from absolutely grabbing him and throwing him to the ground.
Right. These things can happen. It happened Portlaoise last year in the county final against Stradbally, where the last attack of the game and they were able to create run from one end of the field to the other, and everyone's saying pull him down, and then suddenly if you're slick enough with your hand passing, it's not always as easy to pull lads down as Ulster football makes it look, basically. They just have it down to a fine art. Right, hurling all-stars, we want to talk about now that we've gotten over Conor's heartbreak. I don't know, I'm looking at this team, lads, and immediately I complain and give out about all-star teams, and I find it very difficult to find any fault with this team. The only issue I have with it is Pádraig Mannion, who in my eyes up until the final was a runner for player of the year as a right half back. He was absolutely outstanding. He's picked cornerback. So my huge gripe is, if Pádraig Mannion has played right half back all year, Paddy Maher has been played right half back all year, Paddy Maher actually plays left half back all year. So if you've had a brilliant year and you're very, very unlucky not to get an all-star because someone in your position has just shaded you on that. So they've bottled between Pádraig Mannion, Pádraig Maher and Mark Coleman. 3 into 2 doesn't go. So one brilliant performer can't make the all-star team. I think that's the way we should do it. Now, in fairness, they haven't jigged around the team too much. Usually the players are in their positions.
You think that just one should lose out?
Big name has to lose out there. Because this is all about the outstanding player in your position during the year.
But they did not introduce a system a couple of years ago to make it. It was kind of meant to recognise how fluid that Gaelic football and hurling is now these days, and people don't necessarily play in assigned positions. So the idea was pick the six best backs and pick the six best forwards, as opposed to doing what you did. And just because somebody plays, there's two people competing for one position, the one has to lose out.
See, hurling's not really like that. I know Waterford, like for example, Tadhg De Burke is going to lost out. Because there's not an all-star for being a sweeper, you know. So I understand that Garrod McInerney is the outstanding centre back, so Tadhg De Burke is going to lose out there. Hurling's a little bit more structured outside of Waterford, maybe a little bit Wexford, where players do tend to stay in their positions, so you man your part of the field.
But I think even with football, like the difference between halfback and cornerback is crazy. Like, you know, in the last 2 years, wing backs have won the Footballer of the Year because they've been so attacking and so noticeable. They shouldn't be doing the six best backs. And I think you're right, Willie. It's like it has to be not cruel, but this is the all stars.
It's like, cruel.
You're either the best at number five or you're not, and that's it.
And that's the hard decision. Sometimes I think they bottle the hard decision because, like, I mean, there's nobody going to feel good about saying Paddy Maher, Mark Coleman, or Padraig Mannion, you're not getting an all-star. But I think it comes down, Padraig Mannion is right half-back and it has to come down a straight choice between Mark Coleman and Paddy Maher. And one of the two of those brilliant performers this year has to lose out.
And the hard decision there, would probably be Mark Coleman loses out because he didn't have the best semi-final when they put Brick Welsh on him. You know, he was targeted, Brick Welsh being Waterford's most experienced player.
Yeah, no, you can look at that.
And job.
Paddy Maher had a really tough time in the first round against Cork. He got, you know, ran around the place as well. So, like, I mean, if you're to go down through every game, it's hard to know. But I genuinely think these tough decisions. Stephen O'Keefe, like, another thing is I complain a lot about the one team in an All-Ireland final getting seven nominations. It's too many. I always say this. But I'm looking through all those Galway players that got All-Stars, lads, and they're arguably in the running for Player of the Year. Like, they're actually, you know, the most outstanding. Dahi Burke, there is no fullback anywhere close to him performing this year. You've Garrod McInerney, you've David Burke in midfield, and then you have the three forwards, Joe Canning, Conor Whelan and Conor Cooney. They are shoe-in All-Stars. Like, there's actually not one you could take off Galway and feel good about taking one off them.
Even you talking about Padraig Mannion, like, the person I'd be thinking to come and replace him would be Adrian Toohey, like the man marker for Galway all year.
Toohey, or Colm Spillane from Cork was outstanding for the year as well. So, like, I mean, that's a specialist cornerback losing out because a wing back had a great year, and I think that's just wrong.
Yeah, and I agree with that because, like, Toohey was the best number two, you see, and he's sitting there thinking, right, I'm a shoo-in for an all-star here number two, but then a wing back.
I will swap the two wings, like, I will give
that's,
a number
yeah,
to
that's,
you
that's,
a that's allowed
like, yeah.
That's allowed.
I think this goes back for me to the time Peter Canavan got one at half forward, was it just
centre half forward for two
Peter
games
Canavan.
Yeah, in 2005 I think that was
just a nice sort of send off for Peter, yeah, like Peter the Great. But even like, yeah, and I agree what you're saying, but the point was there, you said about how many Galway players getting it, but if we are taking a Galway player out, a Galway player comes in, so I don't think there's an issue.
Yeah,
they're by far the best team, so that's fine, I think.
No Kilkenny players, lads. It's only the second time in the last 21 years that Kilkenny haven't won an All-Star. The other was 2013, when they didn't reach the All-Ireland final. They were beaten in the quarter-final by Cork. And we all know what happened then. They came back and won the next two. So, like, I mean, maybe this is the extra
15 Kilkenny players next year.
Not going well is a kick in the arse for Kilkenny. Not winning an All-Star is the salt in the wounds that kind of just gets them really angry to come back. And the only, like, Conor Leighan, lads, is hugely disappointing to lose out. The only one you could potentially get him ahead of is Michael Brick Walsh. I can't see any of the other five forwards, you know, losing out. Kevin Moran played a lot of his hurling in midfield, but like you say, Conan and Connor, Waterford are so fluid in their play. Kevin Moran, you're not really sure. He lines out in midfield at the start, but he plays a very attacking role, and it is very close to wing forward where he plays as well.
What about Austin Gleeson? Like, you know, has it ever happened before that somebody's coming into a final and they're in the running for hurler of the year, don't have a good final and they don't even get an All-Star.
Yeah. See, Gleeson scored that wonder goal against Cork in the semi-final, but Gleeson was marked out of that game for about 50 minutes of that game. Like, I mean, he finished the game well and got 1-1, but he wasn't outstanding. He was marked out of it against Cork in the first round. He rallied through the qualifiers against, you know, Offaly and, you know, different teams like that. He played well enough against Wexford. I don't think he was in the running for Player of the Year. And again, if we're being consistent on this, it's him or Joe Canning for 11. So Austin Gleeson is losing out on 11, and that's the fair way to do it.
Gleeson's was more a season of moments, like real spectacular moments. There was that pickup in the Munster Championship that was outrageous, and then that goal is as good as you'll ever see in the semi-final. But whether he did it consistently, and the fact that there was such spotlight on him in the final and it wasn't his best day, that probably kind of cost him in the end.
I think I have a real thing for people like Gleeson because they were just those moments, and I think that needs to be recognised as well. I remember someone saying to me before, Ronaldo scored a hat-trick but he didn't have a good game. It's like, Jesus.
Well, I'm glad. No, I'm glad you said that because it gives me a chance to announce that the Woolley Awards, I think it's the 7th annual Woolley Awards, is going to be on Monday now. So we're going after the All-Stars instead of before the All-Stars. And we will take into account Austin Gleeson's brilliance with point of the year, moment of skill of the year. We have different categories, which is all inclusive. And our All-Star team, even though, listen, I'm not too sure how much different it is going to be from this, I might have a good idea of giving you a clue that Padraig Mannion will be right half back on it anyways. But I want to move on from that, Les, because we're going to talk plenty about All-Stars on Monday's special Woolley Awards show, because I want to move on to this 2018 Master Fixtures list that Croke Park released during the week. And like the big thing from this is that Fergal McGill is saying there's going to be a reduction of 9 intercounty weekends in 2018. So you're going from 35 intercounty weekends to 26. Absolutely, that's a big help. And an increase in club-only weekends, which is 15 to 24, which are defined as those when 28 or more counties are not involved in inter-county competitions, right? So this is the master fixture list. I don't see anything majorly huge in this. They did the one thing, they took the one thing from the CPA's proposal that I was completely against, and that's April free for club. I can't get my head around this, lads. I just don't understand it, because the league starts... the league starts, the league finishes. So then you're going to lose all your players when you're actually trying to prepare for the championship. The championship this year is so intense that you're playing every week. So you're losing a month. You're losing players for a month back to more amateur club setups. What are the clubs going to do in that month? Are they going to play a championship, right? If you play a championship, our team's going to be knocked out in April. If you could get 2 championship games played in April, they're gone. So club players now are going to have to do a pre-season in January, February, March for club championship in April. Then some of them could be out, their year's over, so they've nothing to look forward to in the summer. Then others that continue on are going to have to go easy then in May and then start doing pre-season in June, July to start coming again in August. So they've 2 pre-seasons in the same year. It's an absolute mess. There's no need for this April only. If you're going to give a month to club, and we're all agreeing that they need more club, play the leagues in April and finish the championship a month earlier. Finish the championship at the end of July. Start every club championship in the whole country on the 1st of August and play August, September, October, November as 4 exclusive only months. Why is this? Why are they trying to complicate things? And it's almost like, okay, this will satisfy the CPA because they're rattling the boat, so give them this month free in April. And it's the most mindlessly stupid thing I've ever come across. Like, there's no logic to player, and intercounty managers won't allow it anyways. Like, I mean, they're not going to.
That's the big thing.
They're not even going to release their players. Like, it's absolute. It's a nonsense.
If you take the round robin for Leinster and Munster hurling, for example, comes into effect in the second week of May.
What? So, like, I mean, come on.
And they're playing county players on like involved in those championships are going to be playing 5 weeks solid, and like these championships are going to determine how their year goes.
Yeah.
Do you think that those players will be spared the entire month of April to go with their clubs and then be brought back in on 1st of May? Lads, you have 10 days to prepare for the next 5 weeks.
And we know, like, I mean, oh, they're peaking for August. Oh, they're peaking for May. Like, so the training, the intensity, everything's planned out on a 7-month basis. So what do you go? We go 2 months here. You're heading off there now. See you, lads. Off to your junior club. And then we're going to pick this up in May, right, when you're gone. And we all know muscle memory. You stop doing your weights to a degree for 2 weeks and you're almost back to scratch again. Like, I mean, it's so stupid. Start one. Stop mixing the two. Start one. finish it, start club. We see the job Ayr Sport are doing with the club, and I hate this scaremongering. Oh, we'll have nothing in August and September for the big month. We will. Look at the interest in the club. Yeah. Ayr Sport for Vincent Spallymun the other night, lads, did an hour preview to this match where they were out on a training pitch with Dean Rock. They did a little bit. I enjoyed it. Then they had three pundits, and they had Johnny Cooper on co-com for a county final. Who says we can't make that really big in September? August might be just your normal club championships. We get to September, we're hitting county finals, and Ayr have committed to this. Who's saying that can't be a big GAA month? It just won't be the inter-county month.
And April's one thing. Who gives a shit about April? What club player cares? And the other thing is the month. You get four games. Here's four games for you. You'll be happy with that. What's that going to do? You're right. Either it needs to be finish the county season and then start the club season, or just give it a... club players don't really care as long as they know when they're playing. So if you told them you're playing every second week or whatever it is, that's probably not manageable, but just tell them when they're playing.
But if club players are told, and this is what happens in Laois, lads, and this works every year, and no club players complain in Laois, they play the league, right? 8-10 rounds of the league without county players, right? And if the odd week you have them, and that's great. But club players have regular games. The league champions will be crowned in maybe June, start of July. The championship for every club starts in start of August. Now, they have the luxury of Laois being out usually in July, but if you finish the inter-county season in July, every county has this. So you have league matches, you have your fixtures of leagues. Nothing's going to change these. Then you have your championship starts at the start of August. Nothing's going to change this. So you can take your holiday in June. You can do all this and plan around. Where are you planning now? Because you're coming and going in August. You're not sure when it starts in the summer, whenever the county's knocked out. There's no definite start date. And none of this is being fixed.
And what does April do for Laois now, where they were happy?
It messes it up. Yeah. It actually messes it up. Everyone's happy. And Armagh do the same thing as Laois as well. And Aaron Kernan told us everyone's happy in Armagh. Yeah. Why can't that be copied? That stop, finish inter-county, start club. Let's make a big deal out of the club. You have Ayr Sport on board. I'll mention them again because I think this is outstanding coverage of club football. The logic of it. And this isn't a criticism of the GAA. I criticise the CPA's April idea. I just can't get my head around it. But this is what we have for next year now. In general, it's going to be an intense year. There's no doubt about that. The provincials, the league is run off real quick. The provincials run off real quick. The Super 8s then, it's an intense, absolutely intense year. There's no doubt.
Yeah, just about to say as well that the GAA have they made a big deal about the fact that they've made the free month of April, but they've kind of passed the buck a little bit because they're like, it's up to clubs to be vocal as opposed to putting something in place that, even if the month might be wrong, to guarantee it rather than leaving it up to the club to say to a county manager, well, the GAA gave me this, and then having to fight with them, to get their county
players. There's going to be so many fights in that April.
And then even just going back on the last few weeks, we've had we've been looking at club fixtures for the weekend and it's been absolutely packed. I mean, there's been five or six county finals that you'd want to see on the same day, but you're not going to see them all. And then if you kind of implemented the system that you're on about, if everyone worked together, you could space them out more to make the coverage that TG Cahir and Ayr provide even better again, and kind of give more to the neutral.
Yeah, and we mentioned TG Cahir there, obviously, because they've been there for so long taking care of them. And Ayr have come in and shown extra games that TG4 weren't showing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you read tweets from Dick Clerkin and he's got such a spoofer about Sky. He's like, oh, Ayr Sport is pay-per-view, so why is everybody pro Ayr Sport and anti-Sky? And it's like, Dick, stop being so, basic and simplistic. I've no real issue with the pay-per-view. I've the issue with Sky taking games that would be free. Ayr Sport are showing extra games that nobody else wanted. They're promoting club football. Sky have outbid TV3 where we could all see it for free, and Sky have taken those free to Ayr and put it behind a paywall. You're not comparing like with what Ayr Sport have done here at all. If Ayr Sport came in, outbid TG4, and suddenly we had to pay for our games on a Sunday that TG4 wanted to show, I'm sure the whole country would be up in arms with Ayr Sport as well. It's such simplistic nonsense that he comes out with.
Yeah. Will we get into the Sky Sports debate now?
No, we're not getting into that. We're not getting into that because we have to move on. There's a real weird story here during the week. It's about Matty Ford. And there's a piece on The Independent, and it is... What's the journalist's name again? I think he's a local journalist.
Brendan Furlong.
Brendan Furlong. So this piece, and this is what's the real weird thing about this, is that these quotes are attributed to Matty Ford. Big, huge headline, "I'm done with Wexford football," according to The Independent. Basically, those at the top don't give a damn about Wexford football. So Matty Ford, obviously, probably the best footballer that's ever come out of Wexford, slating his own county board is big news. So Matty Ford has tweeted that this has nothing to do with me. I did not say that. He said, "Just so people know, all Brendan Furlong's words were not mine. Only quote I did give was to say wouldn't be involved due to minor situation." So I'm not really sure what that minor situation was. There's something with their minors, footballers. Anyways, that piece is still up on the Independent's website. I don't understand this, unless there's something I'm missing here, because the Wexford County Board have released a statement and said, "Wexford GA is extremely disappointed with the inaccurate and misleading article in the Irish Independent newspaper on the 31st of October regarding the promotion of Gaelic football within the county." That's out 2 days. That piece is still up in the Irish Independent. So unless this Brendan Furlong has audio of Matty Ford's voice and Matty Ford is lying about this, I can't comprehend why they would leave that article up when Matty Ford is denying that it was him. It's a strange one.
Unless they actually have audio of him saying it. Like, I don't know why he'd be denying
it. But then Matty Ford seemed confident enough that he didn't say it, so why would he come out and say that none of these quotes are attributable to me, do you know?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of an old, like, John Brennan used to manage Derry, rang our paper one day and given off about a headline, "I'm disgusted." That was the headline. "I did not say that," and we were all listening to the audio and it was said it like three times, like, "I'm disgusted." And you're like, "John, you did say it." Yeah. Like, but
so it's not unprecedented that someone would say, "I didn't say something that's recorded."
Yeah, but you're right, Connor, he seems pretty confident that he didn't say it. And I don't know, it's a very strange one. It's weird. Unless there's nobody's seen it, then it's still nobody's seen this whole hoopla going on.
Or the piece is doing really, really well.
Me too.
We all know that you know, do we really have to take that down? Look, people, this is flying there.
Get the hit out of it for now.
All right, Conan, this one's for you. This is Conor McManus. And I'm reading out these quotes just to completely blow my own trumpet here, right? So this is Conor McManus. He's the Ireland vice captain. And he's talking last week. This piece, I think, was with Donegal Boyle in the Irish Independent. And he says, "I genuinely don't believe you can beat Dublin playing a defensive system because they're so comfortable in that environment. If you go out and play man-to-man and play them toe-to-toe, who knows where it's going to take you. You're not going to beat them doing anything else." Now, Conor McManus is echoing what has been said on this podcast for the whole year, right? Because I went to see Monaghan against Fermanagh in the first round of the Ulster Championship. And I says, Monaghan are going to win nothing playing the way they're playing. I said it's outdated the way they're playing. They're leaving the two lads up front way too stranded. Monaghan didn't listen. Not enough of them listened to the podcast, even though we've had a few of them on the podcast. But genuinely, they went out against Dublin and they probably learned the hard way. Tyrone went out against Dublin, learned the hard way. And maybe if Conor McManus is coming out saying this, Conan, maybe we'll see a shift in tactics in Ulster next year. Maybe the penny's dropped and saying this will only get you so far, but you're not going to compete with the very best teams with this system unless you can start trying getting your own scores.
Can I just say that I'm not that big of an advocate of defensive football. I just think people should be allowed to do what they want to do, and if it's logical, then fine. Like, you know, Dublin are one of my favourite teams to watch. Sort of Peter Hart is one of my favourite players. Like, you know, I like these attacking players. Let's just get that straight.
He's Conor really McManus. Scrambling here now, isn't he?
But no,
do you think we'll see a shift? You know, that's the question.
No,
that's a big statement from Conor McManus, right? You know, that's a big thing for him to say, that our tactics will not get us, you know, any further next year.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get it, and I would like to see somebody trying something different to try and beat Dublin. Yeah, I agree with that, but they could just as easily have been trying to beat Dublin playing toe-to-toe, man-for-man in the last 3 years and getting hammered, and then all of us saying they're stupid, what are they doing? Like, you know, look at the praise Carlow got for turning the game into a bit of a dogfight and giving themselves half a chance. I don't think Monaghan, like, yeah, it might take them so far, but I don't think whatever Monaghan do, they will get that far that they can beat Dublin anyway, so... These comments, whether they're playing defensive football or not, I think it's irrelevant. If they do play defensive football, it might still help them in Ulster. So I don't think suddenly, because people realise we can't beat Dublin, it'll stop in Ulster.
See, to look at the bigger picture though, right, and they'll say, is Ulster our plan? Now, this is Tyrone maybe more than Monaghan, because Monaghan, right, have never really done anything outside of Ulster anyways. So maybe they'd be, I'm sure they have ambitions. Tyrone would at this stage now, they're going for three Ulsters in a row. They have to take that extra step. So they're looking at this going, we couldn't beat Mayo with these tactics. We got hammered by Dublin with these tactics. I'm wondering, are we going to see a new Tyrone next year? You know, like, I mean, they have to evolve from that one forward system because the bigger picture, which they have to look at, is maybe not as big as what they thought it used to be.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And any system that's undone by a goal in the first minute is a pretty bad system.
Like, yeah, and no flexibility within it.
Yeah, and you can't do anything about it. You're behind and that's it. Like, game over. Like,
but was there not supposed to be... I didn't spot it, but I think that the general belief was that there was an evolution within Tyrone's system this year. And I think...
I
didn't think so either, but I think there was a consensus that thought that, and there was a lot of people, I think Conan included, that thought that Tyrone were going to beat Dublin in the semi-final based on that. But I just thought that the teams against Tyrone and Ulster were poorer and they weren't doing anything particularly different.
Yeah.
I didn't think they would win based on their evolution. I thought they'd win based on... Yeah, I thought they had taken themselves further within that system and they were fitter and they played it better and their footballers were coming more into it. But yeah, I agree. Like, again, it comes back to the fact that Tyrone have a lot of brilliant footballers and they need to use them to try and beat Dublin. Like, it's just simple logic sometimes, but I don't know what Monaghan can do by going toe-to-toe against... How could Monaghan beat Dublin's 15 players? I don't...
Yeah, they can't really beat them. It's just maybe, you know, let's try the 15. If that doesn't work, let's maybe try a combination of the two. You know, like, I mean, listen, let's be honest. There's no teams in Ireland that can beat Dublin outside of Kerry and Mayo anyways. So, like, I mean, you're changing things around to beat a team that you're just not good enough to beat. Maybe that's the reality of it. But you'd still like to see them, if that's not working, change it and try take them on doing something else. You know what I mean? You couldn't see Ulster teams coming down with those same tactics. I think it would be crazy if they did.
In Ulster's defence, though, like, you know, people have opened up this year. Like, Armagh were definitely open. Derry were open for Tyrone. They walk right through them, but they give Mayo a rattle. Donegal were too open. Like, we're saying that they're too open now, but some teams did open up and they did start to shift away from that, but it's hard to judge it because it also coincided with the standard going down in Ulster as well.
The thing I'm going to say, because we move off this, because Conan could talk about Ulster all day. I was about to move off it a second ago, but the reason you can almost say this is that you'd hope that all the Ulster teams kind of decide this together, because as we know, if one's really defensive team and the other come out and say, we're going to attack you, the counter-attack's on. Like, it's always that kind of, you know, double bluff where you'd almost imagine, unless they both blink at the same, they all blink at the same time, no one's going to be brave enough to go and, you know, say, I'm going to attack. Look at our man Tyrone, you know, and maybe they just completely played in Tyrone's hands. Anyways, we talked enough about that. Just before that, lads, Boyle Sports very cheekily here offering some odds on Ballyragget, who are playing at the weekend. And like we talked about Ballyragget last week on the show, we're not going to get into that again. But this, like, I mean, Boyle Sports are taking a leaf out of Paddy Power's book here, definitely. So they're offering 10-1 that either Fifi or Sabrina will streak during the match in Connolly's Park. So Ballyragget are playing the Kildare champions. You'd imagine they're going to be favourites for that. While it's 3-1 that Escort Ireland will have promotional banners at the ground. 12-1 that any St. Patrick's Ballyragget player will get a red card for lewd conduct. I'm not sure that's going to happen. It's never happened before on the field of play. I think that's safe enough. Shorter odds, 4-1 on the team once again making the front page of the national newspapers. If that's for a win, then that might not be a bad bet, because Ballyragget, a lot of eyes are going to be on that game that weren't on it before. And the match bettings, Ballyraggets are 2-9 favourites to win, and the draw is at 12-1. And Ard Clock, who the Kildare champions, are priced at 7-2. So Ballyragget, unbackable favourites to win at 2-9. But you can get 10-1 on Fifi or Sabrina running down the field. All right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back in a second with Dara Conan.
It is tough. it's bone to lies. There's no point in papering over like that. And that it is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after the Leinster final, I was in the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
All right, delighted to say Derek Honan is on the line now. Derek, I suppose it's commiserations really when you're retiring at 27.
Yeah, I'd rather be still going, but that's just the way the position I'm in now. Unfortunately, I had to leave it.
Yeah, so what was it like getting that news? Were you expecting it or?
I was tough now getting it. Really, I had been dealing with it for a while, whereby I was like unable to train and play without pain. And I suppose I'd been kind of coming to terms with it while I was going through that. And it was only then in August of this year, I suppose, that I was advised totally to knock it on the head. And I just decided to take that. So it was very tough at the time, right? But I suppose as the weeks passed, it got a bit easier. And then I found last week when it was announced, and it was probably fresh again in my mind. It was probably a bit harder to deal with then again at that stage.
Right, okay. So for anybody listening that doesn't know by now, you know, it was obviously came out last week. I think you did a piece with Marie Crowe that you've had to retire because your hip just isn't up to it anymore. Like, I mean, you've been advised medical grounds just to stop playing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, to what extent is your hip at? And maybe tell us a little bit about when it started and, you know, what state it's in.
Yeah, so I suppose the history of it really was the problem arose initially in 2011, where it presented as osteitis pubis, and I played a couple of games that year with Clare, and I was just unable to move really freely at all, and it was very, very stiff. As a result, then I stopped playing, but I didn't understand what the problem was or how to fix it. So it was later on that year then I had missed my last year in the 21s, I had missed my whole club season, and I had missed the county senior scene at that year. But later on that year then I was recommended to me that I go down and speak to Patrick Carton in Waterford, and he told me that the problem really was with my hip as opposed to my groin, which is what I thought at the time.
Right.
And he performed two hip arthroscopies on either side. So what that meant was there was bony growth on the femur, and it was coming up and hitting off the hip bone. And as a result, then the bone was, growing and hitting faster and damaging the cartilage then as that contact was made. So it was then when it presented itself again this year, in the year just gone, the joint space, which is cartilage between the joint there, had worn down significantly, and there wasn't as much joint space as a result. So the hip had deteriorated in the few years, I suppose, since.
Right, okay, so that's
at the moment.
So what caused it, Derek? Because, like, I mean, some people have said to me, you know, Derek Honan is 6'7", maybe there's some mobility issues and that's what's causing it. But then you look at Conor McGrath has had similar operations on his hip, Keane Dillon, Sain Amori, all kind of, you know, from the same county, and then you're thinking, what's going on down there that this is happening?
Yeah, it's I suppose the frame that I have is larger, right? So lends itself to injuries more often. But it's really a load management thing that's causing the problem, overload and training. And as you said, it's been, I think Peter Logan, myself, McGrath, Maury, Keane Dillon, I think there might be another one I'm forgetting, have all had these surgeries. And I've actually, just in the last couple of days, a few people have made contact with me from other counties like that have gone through it as well. And by no means is everyone 6'7".
Yeah.
It's not just, it would, it might be a contributing factor, but it's definitely not the main one.
Is there any particular training drills that a doctor might highlight that might be very hard on the hip? Like I'm picturing these shuttle runs where you go out to the 10, come back in, back out to the 21, back in, that might maybe put a little bit of pressure on the outside of the knee and the hip maybe or something, or has anything like that been related?
Yeah, that's what I understand myself. Those are shuttle runs are I suppose long distance pounding of the ground, and then I suppose training for we used to train for over 2 hours, like, and then you train again the next day. So that's our load management where that comes in, and just the intensity of training for too long, too many times, say, in a week or whatever it is.
Right, because like, I mean, when I heard this news, I was thinking, Jesus, Davey must have ran the shite out of them for the time he was there, and you know, because he would have come from the Gerlach Nan school of training, where you know they would have done some savage training. Everybody knows about that. But these issues happened with you before Davey ever took over. So, like, I mean, was this just a situation where you're playing minor under 21, club 21, too many teams, too much training at the same time?
I think that was probably it, where it was too many trainings at the same time. Then when I came into the senior setup, there was probably an overload there with training, and as I said, like there's a number of other lads that have experienced similar problems, maybe not as bad. But I think like it is avoidable. I think I should be still playing if I could have trained a bit smarter for the last 6-7 years. I suppose once I knew that there was an issue in 2011, everything before that maybe you could excuse, but after that I should have been training smarter, doing all these hard and dense sessions, I suppose.
Right, okay, so that would have been, so you would have made Davey aware of your hip problems, and you know, you would have ended up doing that hard slogging that everybody else was doing. So maybe, you know, an individualised programme for you that had hip problems, or even the other fellas who had hip problems, rather than everybody doing the same thing.
Yeah, well, I don't think if you look at any team, like, there's going to be 35 lads on it, different body shapes, different body types, different positions, and any team that I was on, like, really, there's no reason why everyone should do the exact same training, no matter what. But that'll be just kind of common sense, really, as opposed to me pointing them with any particular team I was involved in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely common sense. And I actually feel for you, because I got a lot of cartilage taken out of my knee when I was about 14. So, like, my knee, my bones have been rubbing off each other for, like, 25 years nearly at this stage now. And it's in a bad way. And I know I'm going to run into a lot of trouble. But never once did I go to a leash manager and say, here, my knee has swollen up a little bit, I better take this off. You don't want to show that sign of weakness, that you're not up to it like everybody else is. So I just sucked up the fact that my knee was sore and swelling and didn't really say anything about it.
Yeah. And that's kind of what happens when you're in a group team environment. Like, that's kind of what's expected, that everyone that has issues and not... regardless of the issues, you're still doing this, like, where it's probably not the best approach.
No, it's a GAA thing, and you'd hope now that it's moving on a little bit. I know in a lot of counties, I remember Paul Galvin told me recently that when he went back at 36 and he had problems with his hamstrings, that he was still expected to do the same training as the 21-year-olds, you know, and you would hope the GAA is evolving out of that and more towards individualised training programmes.
Yeah, I mean, some counties probably are, and more counties probably aren't. That's just the truth of it, really, I suppose.
Yeah.
The probably the best counties and the teams that are far the best have probably that edge in terms of their preparation. This is another way to get it.
Yeah. How would you describe your career, Derek?
In what sense?
Like, I mean, would you look back on your career with frustration because of the injuries? Would you think, because, like, you're such an outstanding underage player, But your senior career, me looking from the outside, you might be frustrated looking at you made such a breakthrough when you started, to the injuries kind of disrupting that, and then, you know, maybe affecting your ability to start on the team.
Yeah, there's definitely frustration regards to injuries. There's probably a bit of regret there, like that I wasn't that's a bit smart in my training, my preparation. There's plenty of things I look back with that I enjoyed and have pride in, say, the 2013 run and the league run that we had. But like most people on the team, I'd imagine that there's a frustration there that we didn't do anything after that 13 run in the championship. So I'd say similar to most people that were involved, there's that frustration.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose you're out of the group now, and maybe you can pinpoint why maybe you didn't kick on after 2013.
I probably can't at the moment, but I think I couldn't pinpoint it right now, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of things probably that we didn't do, maybe in the games that we played, that I wouldn't have. That I would have done differently, but I couldn't go back over it all right now, I suppose, but you'll have your opinions on that as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, here's a question I wanted to ask you, and it's because, like, you're 6'7" and, you know, you've an awful lot of hurling in you as well, but would the style that Davey implemented for Clare have suited your qualities as a full forward?
It's probably a difficult position to play full forward when you're a part of a sweeper system in Ireland, because the space that you're looking for is being filled, and there's that man in front of you all the time. So it was a difficult position. I would have rather now have been taken out to the half-forward line and that bit more freedom. So that particular system of the sweeper system, it probably didn't suit me, but some managers think that that's the way to go and that's maximising their team's chances. So, like, I was obviously, as part of the team, I was going to buy into whatever system that we were playing, but it mightn't have personally suited me in terms of utilising the talents that I have.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, even like your half back line have the ball, and, you know, you're not probably even expecting a ball there because it's going to go short, it's going to go to the half forward line, and Clare specifically played through the lines rather than actually, you know, led it into a full forward line.
Yeah, and oftentimes then if you're playing through the lines, like by the time, say, it gets to the half forward line, the defence is well set up at that stage. So that can be very frustrating, right? And probably was frustrated by that numerous times, right, playing in that system.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, yeah, but then again, it was successful in 2013, and maybe the mistake was not moving away enough from the system over the period of time Davey was manager.
Yeah, it was successful for a couple of games in 2013, but it wasn't used all the time either. I don't know, I don't really want to comment on Davey's career as a manager or anything, but I wouldn't really agree with having a sweeper system and that's the way you're playing for the entire year. You might set up for like that for portions of a game or for particular games, but it can become predictable if you're having one style of play for the entire year.
Yeah, okay.
That's not specific now to any manager that I played under, but that is just my opinion on the game.
Ah, yeah, no, in general. But in fair, I think in 2013 you were flexible with the games you played the sweep. For example, against Cork in the final, you didn't play it at all.
We were. Pardon? Yeah, exactly, we were.
Yeah.
We were, exactly, and that's what worked for us that year, yeah.
I want to ask you this question, and you played the first match against Cork in 2013 and then were dropped for Shane O'Donnell, and Shane O'Donnell surprised the whole country by being announced that morning of the game. And, like, I mean, that's Davey explained that he didn't want to put Shane O'Donnell under pressure and everything, but, like, I mean, you were picked on the team to start, right? So, like, I mean, I'm sure the lead up to the game, everybody's talking to you as in best of luck in the final, and you're carrying around this secret, or did you not know until that morning either?
I think I found out earlier in the week, or I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. I knew. I didn't realise Shane didn't know till the day of it.
Yeah, I think that was what was said, wasn't it? Because he didn't want to pressurise him on, or something, didn't want to.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I'd say he had a fair idea, so he was saying, but right. Yeah, maybe he didn't know either, I'm not sure. But yeah, I that was something that I dealt with for the week, right, that was in it. But and yeah, like obviously anyone wants to be set in Northern final, but more importantly, I suppose you want to win Northern final, and we did. So it was then just by means at that stage.
Yeah, that's true. But it must be horrible carrying that secret around with you, because you can't let it out because you have to back your team.
Yeah.
But you're trying.
Yeah, I was so frustrated. Like, actually, I would have talked to my family about it maybe. So it wasn't totally locked up. But yeah, and in terms of people and meeting and stuff, I was really trying to just avoid people for the week that was in it, and not to be talking about the game too much.
Yeah, one thing about the GAA I don't like is that idea that somebody has to pretend they're on the team. You know what I mean? This kind of trickery around the teams. Everyone thinks it's clever, but they don't think about the person who has to act the whole week like he's starting, you know?
Yeah, and sure, most times it doesn't make any difference anyway. Like, if you're playing, you're playing. I don't think someone knowing that you're playing, the opposition knowing that you're playing, is going to make a huge difference, really. So, like, those dummy teams that are named a lot of the time, I don't see the point in it most of the time.
Yeah, but I suppose, no, me neither. I think it's nonsense because the team is announced. And a lot of teams, they'll say, right, this is what we're doing. If he's playing, there's a chance he might play. This is what, you know, managers are covering off different things. So it's not like it's just a complete surprise. It must have been a lovely feeling then to score the goal when you did come on, you know, and be able to contribute well to an All-Ireland win, even after the disappointment of not starting.
Yeah, well, it was like it was in my mind anyway. Like, if I do come on, I was probably gonna have a fight for a goal.
Right.
So just because I had obviously that frustration built up in me, and it was a nice way to release it anyway. And in the moment, I enjoyed.
Yeah, so I mean, looking back on the career, like, I mean, that's obviously a huge, huge, like, I mean, you look back at your career, you've an All-Ireland in 21 and you've an All-Ireland senior medal. And like, I mean, there's so many players retire around the country that have nothing anywhere near that. So if that's any bit of a softener, I know you're only 27, but like, you, like, they're two huge, huge medals to have.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, my own father, not so clear. He didn't get the All-Ireland or that, so it's great to have that All-Ireland league, the 21s, and then I have the senior club and the senior intermediate with the club, so like it wasn't too bad all things told, I suppose.
No, not at all. What are you going to do now, Derek? What sport can you play, or what can you do? Like, I mean, replacing what you're walking away from is very difficult. I know myself when I retired, like, individual sports just don't do it for me, because I need interaction with people and, you know, that competitiveness that you bring out in yourself talking to your teammates and stuff. So have you given any thought to what you're going to do now, or what can you do?
Yeah, look, I can, I suppose fitness wise I do recycling, and I can swim and stuff. I'm not really great at swimming though, so it's not that much of a condolence to be able to do that, but I'm going to try golf. Like, I haven't really played much golf ever before, but I'm going to give that a bash. I played a nice bit last summer and I enjoyed it. But like, in terms of replacing it and filling the void that the hurling has left, I haven't landed on anything yet that I'm sure of. So I'm only 8 weeks out of the surgery as well, so I haven't been able to try like many things.
Yeah, that's
or
right.
I don't know what my limits are yet either. So I to answer with you, I'll let you know when I find out what I'm gonna do to fill it.
Yeah, and I know right well you'll make everyone sick playing golf. You retired hurlers just end up being brilliant at golf, and it would drives everybody else mad.
Yeah, I should get myself a handicap and stuff anyway, so hopefully I'll make it with it tight.
Yeah, and any interest in coaching or kind of staying in the game that way, going down to the club and, you know, the next best thing, I suppose, to playing is managing, they say.
Yeah, like, I will. I've taken a few, say, underage sessions within the club and stuff, and I enjoyed it, but I'd like to I'll explore that over the next couple of years as well. And I had enough opinions on it while I was playing, so I'll have high standards to keep.
Yeah, exactly. You can pass on all that wisdom that you've picked up along the years. Listen, Derek, thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck in whatever you choose to do now. We'll be keeping our eye out for you.
No worries. Thanks so much.
is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D right at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around there. But you're looking at me, you're looking
well,
at me
a crowded area, isn't
exactly. You're looking at me with such a confused confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, so lads, next weekend of the toughest, AIB's toughest, and we have a lot of hurling matches, lads, which will draw blank faces from the two of you. I was hoping to get Killian Buckley on the show here because Dixborough are playing at the weekend, only he pulled out this morning. So we're going to have a chat about all these club hurling games, which you can be really excited about. First off, though, Castlebar Mitchells are playing. They're playing Mohill in Leitrim. That's Saturday night in McHale Park. Or Saturday evening, is it? At 2 o'clock. That's what it's down here anyway. Saturday the 4th of November at 2 o'clock in McHale Park, which is a strange time. So Castlebar Mitchells, you imagine going to hammer Mohill. It's whether Castlebar Mitchells are All-Ireland contenders or not is probably the question, Connor.
Yeah, they're 50-1 on to beat Mohill, so right. I don't think that'll be the shock of the year. I think
more
that
chance
happens
of Sabrina and Fifi.
Are they genuine All-Ireland contenders? Remains to be seen, because to be honest, within the latter stages of the Mayo Championship, there was a feeling that they were there for the taking. That might be because of the fact they were going for three in a row, which is really hard to win three in a row anywhere. And Mayo is a difficult championship as well. But they were beaten in the group by Ballina, who they're up and coming, but Ballina are still a 1B team. They just about got over Knockmore in the quarters. Gary Moore took them to a replay in the semi-final, and they got over Ballintober by a couple of points in the end, but you could say that Ballintober didn't have Killian O'Connor for the last few minutes. So they've kind of been, I suppose it's a testament to their durability and their resolve to be, you know, getting the best of all these tight battles. But I mean, you've Carfin and Bridget's on the other side of the draw, I think, and I think either of them will probably fancy their chances against them. Like Mitchells are still very strong. They don't have any real stars.
No, but that's the thing about them. They're a solid club team rather than.
Yeah, I mean they've Barry Moore and they've Danny Kirby and Paddy Durkin, obviously. But they've a lot of guys who, like Donny Newcombe, for example, got nearly all the league from Mayo this year. Ger McDonough has been in around the setup. He was man of the match. Mark Killian in the final also got 2 points as well. Neil Douglas has been one of the best forwards in Mayo for a few years. So while they might not be known outside of Mayo or outside of Connacht, they're well known within Mayo. So whether they have enough, I don't know, like themselves and Carfin, whenever they went toe to toe last year, was really close. There hasn't been much of a turnover of players either side, so I'd just be worried that they had to play 3 games in 7 days before the final. They won't have much time to recover, whether all that football is going to catch up on them.
Right, okay, yeah, so they'll definitely get over this one, but you'd imagine it's going to be Carfin versus Castlebar, and they have a bit of history together, close enough games in the final. Right, so on Sunday then, this is all about the Leinster and Munster hurling championship quarterfinals in Leinster, semi-finals in Munster. So there's some great hurling games this weekend. First one is in O'Connor Park at 2 p.m. Kilcormac Colahy of Offaly versus Castletown Gagan of Westmead. You've also got Camaras of Laois versus Mount Leinster Rangers of Carlow. That's in Amore Park at 2 p.m. Whenever I think of Mount Leinster Rangers of Carlow, I think about this.
Genuinely believe that we're going to win today. We will win. I am 100% convinced we will win. I am 100% convinced. Do not let yourself down today, lad. I want to go to Crow Park on Paddy's Day. I want to more than anything in the world.
I've grown to hate this fella, lads. I don't know. I've been in enough dressing rooms to know that a sub should not really be making those big impassioned speeches. And like, I mean, if it was genuine, fair enough. But if that was for the cameras, which I'm a cynical sort of fella, that was for the cameras, and they were all up on their feet at that stage, and the camera goes around. I didn't see anybody really listening to him all that much. Yeah. But like, I mean, it's a great clip. But that's kind of stuff is reserved for captains, I think. Now, maybe I'm being a bit unfair of club players that have been there and served the club for so long. Maybe they're entitled to stand up and have that kind of say. My idea is that you don't want too many lads shouting and roaring in a dressing room like that, and especially not subs.
The only thing I can think of is if he was injured, you know, or he had just
He did his cruciate for the final, but he was a sub for the semi-final, getting on in 60 minutes, and a sub for the Leinster final when they beat Owler to Bala. He got like 5 minutes that day.
Sorry, I meant a sub talking in the changing room, like if he was injured or if he had just heartbreakingly lost his place, and it's like, you know, lads, I'm fucked over here, like, do it for me sort of thing. That's the only, like, you know, if he's just spoken for the first time as well ever, it might be effective. But yeah, he's the sort of boy that would tell you to be quiet as you're doing stretches in the warm down.
Or cutting corners on the lap.
He might be genuine, but like having represented my club in Celebrity Banner Store years ago, I can assure you that there are definitely people within the club who only come to life when there are cameras in the room. Never make a speech.
You saw this happening, did you?
It's 7 or 8 years ago. I'm definitely not going to name any names, but there was a suspicion of, first of all, our training numbers swelled bigger than they'd ever been before, and some people who were not very vocal beforehand suddenly became the loudest people in the restroom.
Okay, so look, we don't know if we're being unfair on James Hickey. Maybe we'll ask him onto the show sometime to see, like, I mean, because this, you know, he's well known around the country at this stage, because look, it does make for a good ad. I just don't like that number 18 just because I'm allergic to being a substitute, and if I was a substitute, I'd be sitting in the corner with a face on me, so I wouldn't be making any speeches. Right, lads, Coola versus Dixborough, this is the big one in the Leinster club, and this is at Parnell Park at 2 o'clock. Dixborough obviously coming off that absolutely brilliant win at the weekend against James Stephens, scoring 4.15. You know, they were out of sight, kind of let James Stephens back into it, but that's their first county title since 1993, and then they're out 7 days later in Leinster club. So, you know, like, I mean, that's why I wanted to talk to Killian Buckley, and maybe that's why Killian Buckley has pulled out at the last minute and going, yeah, I'm keeping my head down. But you know, it's after the celebrations, you have to celebrate that first club title in, you know, how many years, 15 years. You have to celebrate. You have to show that the respect that it deserves and celebrate the bloody thing. Then you have to think of a Leinster club. And you often see with clubs coming out of the counties after a long, long period of time, just not getting it right for the next one. Like, I mean, you can't come back from that jubilation and that those celebrations to actually getting serious about a competition that you don't know very well. Now, Kilcar, you could argue, did it, but I think they had the 2 week break between theirs. Maybe they didn't, but they came with a brilliant performance. No, Kilcar did have a 2 week break because they won a league final the weekend after the county final. But I think coming down from that and playing a team like Coola, who are second favourites for the All-Ireland, just off 3 in a row for Dublin. So them winning their county final will not be in the same ballpark as Dixborough winning their county final. I don't think you're comparing like with like, and that's why you'd have to fancy Coola.
Their priorities would have been, I can't speak for Dixborough, but a lot of clubs who maybe aren't serial winners will have thought, won't think beyond county final until they get there. You can't.
You actually have to win. With us with Portlaoise, we were winning, maybe it was our second or third one in the space of 5 years before we started at the start of the year going, we're talking about Leinster's now. Before that, you can't start talking. That's nonsense. But the Coola now are not talking only. They're looking at a big picture of all Ireland's. That's just, but Dixborough aren't.
Yeah, you can't and you don't. Like, you just, all you want to do is win the championship. And not to take away from the provincial championship, but you have to be a very special club or serial winners to even, like, entertain the idea of what happens beyond winning the county title. That's the be-all and end-all. When you, like, if you haven't won it, when you set out to start of the year, so that's just one. Like, you, Connor, like, I'm sure you weren't thinking about winning.
No, not at all. Like, even,
not that you have to worry about it now, but
4 minutes of injury time left, maybe they were starting to think about the Connor club. That's what happened. We had to get another dig in there. Munster club semi-finals, lads, and these are two great games. Well, Ballygunner versus Six Mile Bridge, you'd have to fancy Ballygunner there, even though they're on the road, I think it's 7 or 8 weeks in a row, sort of non-stop, constant, and that's thrown in extra time with Thurles Sarsfields last weekend, in which was an absolute classic game. Really raging, I missed that Kilkenny final and that Ballygunner Thurles Sarsfield game, because I was at the Portlaoise match over in over in O'Connor Park. So they were two brilliant games. So Ballygunner, like, it's all after the game, if Ballygunner lose, they say they're tired. If they win, they say they've great momentum. That's kind of like the after game analysis that you're going to have. Ballygunner be too strong for 6 Mile Bridge, you'd imagine there. The other one is Napiershig, who are actually favourites for the All-Ireland Club, even ahead of Coola. That'll tell you how strong they are, and they're playing Blackrock of Cork, you know, so that'll promise to be a good game as well. You actually have to fancy Napiershig as well. If Ballygunner and Napiershig both get through, what a brilliant Munster club. You'd have to say if Coola beat Dixborough, you'd have to put them in as very strong favourites then to be winning the Leinster club. That's all the club action for the weekend, and that's all we have time for as well for the week. So lads, thanks very much, and sure, we'll be back at the usual time next Thursday.
Monday, back on Monday.
Brilliant, Conan. That was terrible by me. We'll be back on Monday with the Woolley Awards, and back as usual next Thursday with the podcast. I repeat, the Woolley Awards is on Monday, so make sure you listen to that. Thanks, Conan. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.